This is case number 86911-COA, Nicholas Vietti versus State of Nevada. This is the time set for the argument, and we have for the appellant, Ms. Roth. And is Ms. Reynolds joining you too?
She'll just be activated.
Okay, welcome. And for the state, Jason Woodbury, Carson City District Attorney, who's was assigned to this case in Washoe County. Ms. Roth, you have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any time for a rebuttal?
Yes, thank you. I'd ask to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
5 minutes. All right. This case has several important issues in it. And we would just like counsel to be aware of the fact, though, that we want to make sure that both of you really covered the Fifth Amendment-related topic with the ordering of the examination of Mr. Vietti. All right, Ms. Roth, you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Erica Roth, and I represent appellant Nicholas Vietti. This case is about the First Amendment right to express political dissent, even when distasteful. Mr. Vietti is a United States Marine veteran and a bombastically outspoken political podcaster. On his podcast, he would vent about frustrations with politics, and Mr. Vietti made outrageous statements aimed at everyone from Nancy Pelosi to local elected officials. Included in those statements were statements that I myself and likely others would find offensive or even threatening. But it doesn't matter what I think. What matters is what Mr. Vietti thought about those statements, and the state did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Vietti had a subjective understanding his statements were anything other than over the top and absurd. Additionally, Mr. Vietti's Fifth Amendment right was violated when the state was offered an extraordinary opportunity to evaluate Mr. Vietti outside the presence of his attorney by psychological evaluation, when he was not granted that same right himself. So I'll turn first to the Fifth Amendment issue. As the court noted, it finds that of great importance. The state and the lower court, when looking at this issue, first turned to case law in Mitchell v. State. And there's some very important distinctions that we need to make from this case and Mitchell. The first being that the defense was not granted the opportunity to have its own evaluation of Mr. Vietti. And this is incredibly important because that is a requirement under Mitchell. So Mitchell does require that, number one, a defendant puts his mental state at issue by claiming that his criminal acts were justifiable. This is most often seen in cases of self-defense. Number two, that the defense conducted its own psychological evaluation of the defendant. And then three, that the state's evaluation is a compulsory examination in order to rebut the defendant's claim. Now, I don't believe Mr. Vietti did not place his mental state at issue in the way that you would with self-defense. And this is important, especially when we consider the holding in Counterman, which requires a subjective understanding to put into context what the individual was thinking about statements versus what someone else was thinking about statements. But even if the court were to find that his mental state was at issue, he never underwent his own psychiatric evaluation. And I think it's really important when looking in the record. So there is, during the testimony of Dr. Cord, the state's own expert witness, Dr. Cord testified that he relied on the very same materials that the state's expert relied on. That was the CNP reports, which are military records, and then and prior examinations. That was good enough for the state's expert witness to rely on. But they also got an extraordinary relief beyond that, in which they were able to sit down with Mr. Vietti over a period of 2 days and interview him without counsel present and over objection. Mr. Vietti's counsel was not granted this same opportunity, and that put Mr. Vietti at a significant disadvantage during that trial. I want to note one of the objections that was raised at trial by Mr. Vietti's trial counsel. And this is at Joint Appendix 4707. And she stated, Dr. Best is going to talk about the fact that she had expertise in PTSD and the human brain. She had reviewed the 2008 and 2010 compensation and pension reports. She listened to the podcast, and she's going to talk in her expertise whether or not and to what extent the podcast reveals the impacts of post-traumatic stress disorder with regard to the defendant. That's it. Now, the state's expert witness could have done the same. The state's expert witness could have relied on those same reports and the podcast to offer a differing opinion. And the state's expert witness did, in fact, rely on those reports and that podcast in forming his opinion. But he was also offered the opportunity to sit alone with Mr. Vietti outside the presence of counsel and conduct his own examination to provide an opinion on Mr. Vietti's mental state.
Ms. Roth, let me ask this question. Did the defense ever specifically request to be present at this evaluation?
Yes, the defense did make that request to be present. Through the briefing, and this is in the motion hearing leading up to trial on this issue, the defense did first make the request to have their own evaluation done. When that wasn't granted, the defense and realizing that the state was going to be offered the opportunity to evaluate Mr. Vietti outside of their presence, they did make these specific requests to be present for that. Now, there is case law that would allow...
Could you clarify? You said the defense asked for its own evaluation. Does that mean separate from Dr. Best?
Dr. Best never evaluated Mr. Vietti personally.
Right, but... Was there a request to do something like the state was doing?
Yes, that's correct, by Dr. Best. Now, Dr. Best was certified outside the state of Nevada, and so the court found that she wasn't qualified to do that evaluation. At that point, the defense rescinded they were not going to have Dr. Best testify at that point. So, but... Seeing that the court was moving forward with an evaluation of Mr. Vietti for the state, they did decide to move forward with Dr. Best's testimony on the records in which she was provided.
Well, so Dr. Best was actually going to withdraw?
Correct.
Was the court ever advised of that?
I believe so. Yes, I believe so. And this is in, if you look to the hearing leading up, my emotional support binder is back there, so I apologize. This is in the oral argument on that motion, and this was the notice of expert witness. And there's quite a bit of argument that goes back and forth on this issue. But yes, that's correct. Dr. Best was not granted the opportunity to evaluate Mr. Vietti. They did make a request to, take back, as in layman's term, her expert testimony, and then proceeded forward when it became very clear that the court was granting the state's motion to have Dr. Cord evaluate Mr. Vietti. And then I'll finally note on that issue, and then I would like to turn to the counterman argument, is that the court in Mitchell found that a compulsory examination was appropriate because otherwise, if the state could not personally examine the defendant, the state could refute the defendant's self-defense theory only by cross-examination of his experts, lay testimony, and testimony by the state's experts predicated solely on courtroom observations and hypothetical situations. Now, that is exactly what the defense was limited to in presenting their expert testimony. And so it flipped the power in this case and limited the defense to what Mitchell found was exactly inappropriate. And so Mr. Vietti either should have been granted the same opportunity or the state should not have been granted that opportunity, and that's not what happened.
I just want to make clear one issue. On behalf of Mr. Vietti, no motion was made for an evaluation by another professional, not Dr. Best, but another professional.
No, and this is also laid out in argument leading up to trial on the notice. Now, there's some back and forth because it is, first of all, very hard to find evaluators that are able to do this in state. But they did make the request for her to be qualified, and that was denied by the court based on her licensure.
Even a temporary licensure or provisional licensure just to perform the examination was denied by the district court?
I'm not sure if that was the exact language that was used, but there was a request and an attempt to have her qualified as a licensed professional who could conduct those evaluations. Turning to Counterman, unless there's additional questions, yeah.
Before you move on to Counterman, if you could address the prejudice from the Fifth Amendment violation.
Absolutely. And this will tie into Counterman. One thing that's very important is that Mr. Vietti's subjective knowledge of what his statements meant to him when he made them is at issue here. And the defense was unable to present through an expert what PTSD meant for him specifically and how that would have changed how he viewed the statements that he was making. So, you know, and I make this this analogy in regards to Counterman as well, but if you think about, let's say, I'm not saying that I've ever done this, but I may or may not at one point in my life have told a boyfriend, I'm going to kill you. Now, I know I'm kidding, but I want a desired result. I want my boyfriend to stop doing whatever he's doing that is causing me great anguish and annoyance. So I want a desired result. And may or may not over time, a boyfriend may tell you that he actually really did genuinely in that moment fear for his life because I know that I can be scary sometimes. But what matters is what I believe that statement to be. I would know that that statement is ridiculous, that that statement is not meant to threaten anybody, but I still want a desired result from that boyfriend. Another good example of this is rap lyrics. And in Counterman, they rely some on Alonis to come to their decision in that, where they talk a lot about rap lyrics that are very violent, very aggressive. Example they give in oral argument on Counterman is in regards to Eminem lyrics, where Eminem is a rapper, and in the early 90s, he released a song called Kim, where he raps in great detail about murdering a woman, and at the time, his estranged wife's name was Kim. And so the intent there is important, understanding that if you're a rapper or a podcaster, the way that you're viewing what you're saying may be very, very different than what somebody else is viewing that as. I am sure Kim, Eminem's ex-wife, thought that that was a threat. But he looked at that as art. And Mr. Vietti did the same. This was his podcast. It was bombastic. It was over the top. It was ridiculous. But under Counterman, the state did not prove at this trial what his subjective intent was when making those statements. I would ask to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the state, Mr. Woodbury.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jason Woodbury representing the respondent in this case, the state of Nevada. This case presents the court with four issues, none of which constitute reversible error. I will take the cue from the court that it is primarily interested in the third issue presented concerning the Mitchell versus State precedent. I will say at the outset that there is a dramatic difference in the understanding the state has regarding the record in this case versus what was just presented to this court. It may warrant a supplemental briefing because from the state's perspective, and with all due respect to my colleague, some of the statements just are not accurate.
Well, what in your view actually happened?
Here is the factual background of what happened with respect to the expert. Pursuant to the discovery statutes, the state received notice that an expert, Dr. Suzanne Best, was going to be providing testimony in this case, specifically in regard to the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder. The notice, from the state's perspective, was somewhat vague in that there was no report included with it from Dr. Best, and there was a rather general description of what she would be testifying to. But at that hearing that was referenced by my colleague, the pretrial hearing, it was drilled down a little bit, and there was going to be testimony in a general sense from Dr. Best in regard to PTSD and its effect on somebody's mental state and how they might interpret aggressive kind of communications. At that point, the state lodged a conditional objection or had lodged a conditional objection in advance of that hearing. And the point of that was foundational and relevance. It wasn't relevant for Dr. Best to provide testimony about PTSD unless other evidence established that the defendant had PTSD or had at the time of the offenses PTSD. So we have that hearing, and at some point, my recollection is that it was just before the hearing, but it could have been just after the hearing. Very close to the originally scheduled trial, the defense was able to acquire from the defendant's military file what were called C&P reports, compensation and pension reports, that did appear to diagnose the defendant as having PTSD. Initially, there were two that were discovered. Eventually, there were four. Now, at that pretrial hearing, it could have been shortly thereafter, but the record will clarify that the defense said, here is our foundational hook. We now have these essentially expert reports saying the defendant has PTSD. Now Dr. Best, who was an out-of-state clinical psychologist, as I recall, now Dr. Best can testify about the impacts of that, because that's our foundational hook. That prompted the state to say, well, under Mitchell, if you're going to provide expert testimony, it's going to be based on a personal examination. That means the state gets a reciprocal opportunity to conduct a personal examination of the defendant. So that's where that came from. The court made its initial ruling that Judge Draculich said she agreed with the state that a reciprocal examination was required under those circumstances, but we were on the eve of trial. So she asked how long it would take to have that accomplished. There was some discussion back and forth, and there was a discussion about whether the defendant wanted to proceed without Dr. Best. That was the choice. That was the option that Judge Draculich gave them and said, we can proceed to trial, but you won't be able to use Dr. Best because the state hasn't had its reciprocal opportunity. The defense did make a statement at that pretrial hearing that it was their preference to proceed with the trial and to abandon Dr. Best's testimony at that point. There was some discussion back and forth. The Judge Draculich, I specifically remember saying, I don't want you to do that. Words to the effect, I think this is an important element of the case, and I prefer you didn't do that. So eventually, the trial was continued, and the state was provided an opportunity to have the personal examination, to retain an expert and get the personal examination done. But I want to make clear to the court the choices that number one, the assertion that that they were somehow denied an opportunity to conduct an examination of their own client, that's inaccurate. That's not borne out by the record. They never asked Judge Draculich, can we have Dr. Best examine our client? Why would they need to do that? It's their client. They have exclusive access to him. If they want to get an examination, they can have permission or not permission. They can go ahead and do it. And then they can choose to disclose it or not. So there was no effort made to have Dr. Best conduct a personal examination at any point. in open court, at least. I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, obviously. There was no effort made at any point to have any other psychiatrist or psychologist on behalf of the defense examine the defendant. The record does not bear that out. That did not happen, and it doesn't make sense that it would happen, because why would you be asking permission to examine your own client? The fact of the matter, and this is, I don't have citation to Dr. Best's cross-examination, but she was asked, did you diagnose the defendant as having PTSD? And her testimony was, no, I can't do that. I'm not licensed here. So it was her choice, or her choice in consultation with the defense team, to not do that. And the representation that somehow they were denied their own opportunity to do that is not accurate.
Well, sir, let me ask this question. The state knew before trial that Dr. Best was not going to be prepared to discuss a diagnosis of Mr. Vietti, correct? I mean, her testimony was not of that nature.
Initially, Your Honor, initially, the before the C&P reports were discovered, it was the defense's position that Dr. Best could offer generalized testimony about PTSD. But after the C&P reports were discovered, it was put on the record, our expert has been provided that and is relying upon that and intends to present testimony that the defendant has PTSD based on these reports, which are, of course, hearsay, admissible hearsay, I understand, but hearsay.
But the state understood that Dr. Best had not personally evaluated Mr. Vietti, correct? There was no independent psychological evaluation, correct?
Correct. We had no confusion about that.
And you had no confusion on that, so you knew that at the time of trial, Mr. Vietti would not be putting on testimony from Dr. Best that would have said, yes, I personally evaluated him and could make that diagnosis.
Not that specific testimony, no.
So why did the state ask for an independent psychological evaluation?
Because the state is entitled to an opportunity to have a reciprocal examination.
But it isn't reciprocal, was it? It wasn't reciprocal because your expert got to actually go in and personally evaluate and ask questions of Mr. Vietti, and Dr. Best did not have the opportunity to do that.
That's all correct. But Dr. Best was relying on examinations that were a reciprocal opportunity in the sense that they diagnosed the defendant with PTSD. Now, there were any number of unanswered questions resulting from those C&P reports. What were the qualifications of the people who performed the examination? What was the raw data of the examination? What tests were provided? All those things. But the defense had the opinion they wanted.
But and you were able to actually question Dr. Best and question Dr. Cord about the deficiencies in the opinion based on her lack of personal investigation or personal examination, correct?
Yes.
So you ended up in a better position than the defendant. You had access that the defendant was not given.
I don't agree with that characterization, Your Honor, because number one, the ability or the result of having data that says what you want it to say. And I don't, what other data is out there? We don't know. We have no way of knowing. Has there been additional treatment since 2015, which is the date of this last C&P report? Has the condition abated? Has it resolved? Anything like that? Nobody knows. Now, is there data out there? We have no way of knowing.
And we're able to present that argument to the jury in closing, correct?
We were able to cross-examine Dr. Best on that, but as Mitchell, there's a quotation from Mitchell that goes directly to that point, Your Honor. And here's what Mitchell said, because this is the same issue. Didn't the state have the opportunity to present other evidence, to cross-examine, to present lay witnesses, things of that nature? And Mitchell says, if the state could not personally examine Mitchell, Then the state could refute Mitchell's self-defense theory only by cross-examination of his experts, lay testimony, and testimony by the state's experts, predicated solely on courtroom observations and hypothetical situations. These are poor and unsatisfactory substitutes for Dr. Schmidt's testimony, who was the prosecution's expert, which was based on 2 days of testing and interviews.
So the difference, though, in Mitchell was that the defendant had actually submitted to an interview and spoken with the expert for the defense who was testifying. So the testifying defense expert actually had access that was superior or would have been superior to the state's expert had the state not been given equal access. And all of the cases cited in Mitchell similarly involved the defense sitting for an interview with the expert who was testifying. It seems to me that what happened in this case went far beyond what was permitted in Mitchell or any of the cases that were cited in Mitchell.
Well, if the principle of Mitchell is reciprocity, it didn't go beyond Mitchell at all. And let me try to explain to the court, from our perspective, why this is actually worse than Mitchell. Because you're absolutely right. If an expert comes in and testifies who did the personal examination, they can be cross-examined about all those things. What methodology did you use? What was your raw data? How can we'll never be able to cross-examine the experts who provided the key diagnosis in this case, that the defendant had PTSD. That's critical. That's the key to Dr. Best's testimony. And nobody ever gets to cross-examine them about anything that they did or any of their conclusions. At least in Mitchell, the prosecution had that. And in Mitchell, of course, they ruled that the prosecution's entitled to more. They're entitled to a reciprocal examination.
Did the state ever move to exclude the CMP reports?
In a way, in an indirect way, we conditionally objected to the testimony of Dr. Best without the foundation.
That's not my question. My question is, okay, did you actually move to exclude the CMP reports?
Well, the CMP reports were never introduced themselves into evidence. They were marked for identification, but they were not admitted into evidence. But I think the question that Your Honor is asking is, did we ever object to any testimony about that from Dr. Best? And the answer is we did not at that point because we had been provided the opportunity for the reciprocal examination.
Mr. Woodbury, if we find that there's a Fifth Amendment violation, I noticed that your answering brief did not address harmless error for that constitutional violation, for the Fifth Amendment violation. You addressed it for the Sixth Amendment violation. How should we deal with that?
Well,
argument.
I think in that instance you can look at the record and determine whether there was harmless error. And it was, because Dr. Cord, who did our examination, actually ended up testifying that he believed that the defendant suffered from PTSD. He was not able to say that to a reasonable degree of, I think, psychological certainty was the phrase he used, that he said he couldn't get there, but he said, I believe more likely than not, he does suffer from PTSD. So the conclusion didn't alter the substance of what was presented. The defendant had PTSD.
And what about the fact that the results strongly suggested that Mr. Vietti was not necessarily being completely honest in his presentation? So based on his investigation, his examination of Mr. Vietti, the expert was able to tell the jury that he wasn't honest. Why was that not harmful error?
Well, that was Dr. Best's conclusion, but the threats are the threats. The threats speak for themselves, and there's really no argument as to whether or not those constitute threats under NRS 199.300.
All right, Mr. Woodbury, was there anything you wanted to say about the other argument quickly? Claim of First Amendment and the subjective nature of this?
I probably can't say it as quickly as Your Honor would hope. I would certainly rely on our briefing for those points. Instruction 26 was actually much more advantageous to the defense than Counterman. If you asked, I suspect, the defense today, do you want a Counterman instruction or do you want instruction 26, they take instruction 26 every time because that's a purposeful mens rea instruction. And they had the benefit of that.
All Did you read that case when it came out?
I became aware very shortly after, yes.
Caught your attention?
It did. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Roth, go ahead.
Thank you. To address some points, I want to make clear. So the record does reflect that Mr. Vietti, invoked his right to remain silent. So when he was not given the opportunity, right, so he said, I'm going to remain silent. I'm not going to have Dr. Best, he made this decision with counsel, I'm not going to have Dr. Best evaluate me. I'm not going to make any statements. That is his decision to invoke his Fifth Amendment right. The state was then allowed, after that invocation, to sit down with him over a period of 2 days to ask him very pointed questions and personal questions, and then present that information to a jury, which included statements that he was not truthful. This is the crux of this case. Mr. Vietti's PTSD is the first, second, third, fourth, and hundredth issue in this case. It goes to whether or not he understood, as required by Counterman, that his statements were threats. I want to briefly come back to jury instruction 26, and I'd like to bring the court's attention to the court's reasoning in coming to its decision in Counterman. Now, something that's really important in Counterman is that they define true threats. They say true threats are defined as, and then almost verbatim, it is what is written in jury instruction 26. Then they use the conjunctive, yet we find that proof beyond that is required. They break the statute in two. They say we are defining true threats, and beyond that, there needs to also be proof of a subjective understanding that those threats are in fact threatening, versus me telling my boyfriend I'm going to kill him, me knowing that's not true, and my boyfriend remaining very scared that that might be true. So I don't want to just gloss over Counterman. When you really read through their determination and coming to the need for a subjective intent, it was in regards to the actual threat, not in the desired result. There is a specific intent instruction as to what Mr. Vietti wanted in result, but that does not mean that he understood it was a threat. It could have been something else to him, and that wasn't proven. His PTSD goes exactly to that issue, and that is why Dr. Cord's ability to interview him outside of the presence of counsel is so detrimental to this case.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Both of you did an excellent job, very helpful for the court. I didn't see that we had actually have to have additional briefing on this. Ms. Roth did not rebut what Mr. Woodbury said about the procedural unfolding of the issue. And we'll double check the record on it, but unless we find something unusual, I don't think that's going to happen. Am I missing anything?
Yeah, no, I would concur.
Okay. So we'll take this matter under submission and have a written decision as soon as we